This is episode number 16 of Digital Hazard Podcast on Friday, the 12th of February. I'm Matt Barron, your host, and I have a co-host.
My name is Eric Boyer. I am a junior at the University of Toledo, and I also work as a hardware technician for Nowaka.
If you don't remember, he was on a couple episodes ago, a handful of episodes ago. So he's joining me again for his second try on my show. I'll kick it off then. With Google's buzz, that's the buzz around Google, is Google's buzz. No, I'm not trying to be horribly bad joke about buzz.
That was bad.
It was a bad joke. Anyway, Google Buzz, which if you have a Gmail account, you've probably seen this before. They've popped up a window and will be like, this is Buzz, this is new. And you go and click on Buzz. And the thing with Buzz, it's sort of a Twitter, Facebook integration thing for Gmail that lets you post status updates and lets you sort of interact with friends and reply to friends. But the big thing that the tech community is really sort of up in arms about is the fact that it shares all of your contacts because your Buzz username happens to be your Gmail login. So if I know your Buzz username and the people who follow you on Buzz, then I know your email address and everyone else's email address. Yay for spam. Are you going to comment on that?
It's the problem I have with reinventing social networking is, you know, back when it was MySpace, because that was the first one I had, was a MySpace account. And when Facebook came along, it was all easy, you know, it was an immature social networking. It hadn't really reached the whole point to which it is now with the congruency, and it was easy to switch from MySpace to Facebook because there really wasn't a whole lot to do. And let's face it, MySpace sucked anyway. But you know, for
it was ugly too because everyone had like their own custom CSS and things like that. It was just like
And horrendous spam in the comments with pictures that ruined it. And it was So it was a good move to go to Facebook. And for as much as we complain about Facebook's crashing with the chat and it just epic kills your browser because of JavaScript lag, whatever. It still is the best social. It's got 400 million people on it. That's a lot. And there is a lot of content on there. I mean, I know I have a giant amount of pictures. My friends have a giant number of pictures, comments, notes, videos, whatever. And it's all on there. And to move to another one would be
difficult.
A lot of work. Yeah. So, I can see Google taking their Gmail people and, I'm going to use, this Gmail Buzz thing. Because it's integrated into what I already am using. But for someone like me who doesn't use Gmail and I use Facebook, it would be a lot of effort to move over. So I don't think Google's going to get a lot of, converts necessarily.
Yeah, I see what you mean by that. But I'm Facebook and Twitter, and I had a MySpace for a while, let it die, because let's face it, like, MySpace is the ghetto of the internet. But I see the use in Buzz, that it's sort of a quick way to rattle off like a text message to your like immediate Gmail contacts. But that's assuming that your Gmail contacts aren't the same as your Facebook contacts, aren't the same as your Twitter contacts, because it's sort of nasty to have two different worlds between Facebook and Twitter, which I sort of do. Like, I have Facebook friends that I follow on Facebook, and I have people that I follow on Twitter. And then I only interact with the people I follow on Twitter, and I only interact with the people I follow on Facebook. And if you want to throw in, like, your Gmail friends, quote-unquote friends that you follow, then it's just, it's another world that's really difficult to keep united. And I just, it's almost like a poor try on Google's part. It's like, make it more integrated with something else, and then maybe you'll get the people to switch from, like, even if you made it like a Facebook and Twitter API where you can see all your friends' Facebook stuff and all your friends' Twitter stuff, so it, like, aggregated the two, and then you could get all the content of each, then I think you would pull people away from using Facebook.com, and then they'd go to the Buzz section of their Gmail to interact with their Facebook friends.
Yeah, if they could make it a lightweight interface, you know, that would be great. Because the one complaint I have about Facebook is it's horrendously slow, and it's only gotten slower since they've added more features and they changed the layout constantly, you know, and JavaScript errors every time I use it. But the best thing they did was add the wonderful reply to this email comment feature. Right. So if I see something and, you know, I've been watching it or whatever, I can just hit the reply button in my email and ship out a comment without ever having to load Facebook.com and waiting on it. Mm-hmm. So if they can make it, you know, lightweight enough where it does provide that interface, I could see use come out of it.
Well, if you're complaining about, like, the bloatedness of Facebook, there's a light.facebook.com if you want to fire open a new browser and look at it, and that's, like, the light version of Facebook.
Who uses light versions? No one uses light.
You just said that you wanted a light version.
Well, but I mean, I'm talking about them taking people away from you know, the extra stuff. You see what I'm saying?
All right, I see.
If light.facebook.com was all I used, then maybe I would switch to this Google Buzz, but it's not. So therefore, you know, I could see them pulling away those people that only use that subset.
Right. But yeah, okay, I see that.
There you go. Okay.
All right. Speaking of bloatedness and social networking and social networking, MySpace CEO is now out of a job. Which is kind of funny because
I know, I giggled.
Owen Van Natta has not a job.
That was also bad.
Sorry. he's effective immediately, and he'll be replaced by Mike Jones and Jeff Hirschhorn. Mike Jones is the chief operating officer, and Jeff Hirschhorn is the chief product officer. That is going to go down the tubes really fast, having two CEOs in charge. But Van Natta picked it up after the original founder, a co-founder, Chris DeWolf, stepped down. And we don't really know... Well, that's not true. He sort of messed up MySpace to the point where I honestly described it as the ghetto of the internet.
I guess he should have taken that MySpace music job, but oh well for him.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I really have not used... I mean, just like you, I just let my MySpace die so many years ago. It still exists, I think. Somebody said, hey, I sent it to your MySpace like a year ago, and I said, that still is up? And I said, they're like, yeah, and I was like, oh my god. I thought it like expired by now, but you know, I guess it's still floating around out there somewhere.
Yeah.
So this just goes to prove that, you know, if you don't change and you don't adapt, that... And, well, you have to have good leadership, too. But, you know, things just, you know, they will... If you aren't working with people, people will find another avenue.
Right. Definitely.
You know, if you're not doing what is, you know, wanted, somebody's going to find an alternative.
Although, actually, if you scroll down on the article, there's the graph at the bottom, and it shows that the Facebook visitor trend was below... all of MySpace until like June of 2009, which
that is impressive.
I was like, MySpace. I let my MySpace die like when I was in eighth grade or something, and it was just MySpace sort of always was about music and bands, and then like the individuals got into it, and then all the individuals kind of pulled out. But that surprised me that the Facebook visiting didn't until 2009. That was only last year.
Yeah, it is 2010. Well, that wasn't even, if it was in April of 2009, well, yeah, give or take April, May, maybe. I mean, it's less than a year ago.
Yeah. That's scary.
So, yeah, it is. Yeah, it is.
While we're still on the topic of social networking, we have a Facebook story. And an AIM story. Do you still remember AOL Instant Messenger? That was, like, way back in the 1990s. Like, that was the big thing, the AOL Instant Messenger. That was, like, the original social network.
Sneakernet.
Yeah. Well, Facebook chat is finally opened up to XMPP, Extensible Messaging Presence Protocol standard for its chat. And it lets you sign in your AIM account. And I think also the other way around, that with AIM you can sign into your Facebook chat.
Yes, yes, you can. and I read just actually this afternoon somebody had put it up, a way to get Apple's iChat to work with Facebook chat. Mm-hmm. Since they wrote this extensible interface, you can now use iChat. I don't know if it would work with, you know, other things like ADM or whatever that do the other plugins, but you know, that's always good for me because I hated Facebook chat. It was horrendous and slow, and now my friends can use it and it can be horrendous and slow, and I can sit here with a nice desktop application for my
yeah chat. I mean, I use Pigeon ever since I switched to Linux. There was a while I used Trillion when I was back on Windows, because there was a point where the AIM like client thing just was like, I don't want to deal with this anymore. Although the only thing, and Pigeon for a while had like a poorly implemented Facebook chat sign-in thing, but it didn't really work. It only sort of worked. I mean, as bad as Facebook chat was on the site, it was worse if you tried to do it through Pigeon. Pigeon's been suiting me fine. I can connect to AOL, MSN, Google, and Yahoo. Yahoo I don't use anymore, but I can connect to all the other three. The only thing I miss about Pigeon, the only thing that I would like Pigeon to do, well, like, get a Facebook plug-in, that actually works, that'd be nice, and then get a Skype plug-in. But so far I have to launch two apps when I log into my machine. It's
horrendously disappointing.
Yeah, I thought so too.
I like, when I'm on my Mac, I can just launch, you know, ADM, and I'm good to go. I don't think I have it set up for Skype because I really don't use that a whole lot. But, you know, I've got Xfire, I have Messenger, everything in one app, and that is so nice.
Yeah.
Because it consolidates everybody in one spot.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, good thing for Facebook. I think they made the right move. I think they also are realizing that, you know, this brings in a core set of, I don't want to say feature, but it helps make their business model more stable in that, and I hesitate to use business model too, but it makes their foundations, like, we have more than just comments
right.
on photos and posts. You know, we also have this that you can partake in. You know, it kind of gives them more real estate to play with. You know?
Right. I was going to say something here, I don't really. Oh yeah. When Google Talk initiated the sign in with your AIM address, that was like a long time ago. But that picked up on Google use, because you could sign in to your Google and have Google plus AIM in one spot.
I never used it, so
yeah. Well, they did it.
I can't speak.
All right, so you're gonna take the next story. It's a
I
Google.
Will.
It's a Google story. So
it is a Google
wanna,
story.
If you
want to
take that segue and run with it.
Google has basically announced that they're going to outbuild a gigantic experimental fiber network. Which, you know, people do that all the time. You have Verizon's Fios. You know, my hometown small town telephone company, all their customers are on fiber to the home. But what's so unique and what's so special about Google's build is that they're going to be providing 1 gigabit per second speeds.
Which is more than 100 times faster than what your average American gets.
Yeah, I thought when I moved to Toledo, I thought the cable speed from Time Warner at 23 megs was blazingly fast. 1 gigabit per second is more than 500 times faster than that. Would it be 500? Yeah, give or take. So it's like, no, that wouldn't be 500. It'd be 50.
50, yeah.
Yeah, 50. My bad. I'm a calculus student, too. I very rarely run into a situation where I use all 23 megs of my cable, only if I'm downloading concurrent files at once, you know, because usually the cap isn't my end. It's the server that's hosting it. You know, it only allows so much bandwidth per connection.
Right.
And then, you know, I'll hit that cap and then I'm done. I can't utilize the rest of it. And I used to work for a small telephone company before I moved to Toledo, went to UT and everything. And they are just starting their fiber to the home build. And, you know, I'm still very good friends with everybody that works there. And I was talking to the general manager. I sent him this article way back on whatever it was, Wednesday, Tuesday. And I said, isn't this impressive? I don't care. I'm moving to one of these cities where they're rolling these out. And, you know, he and I got into a discussion of what benefit does it really have? Because, as I had said, I don't really use all of the 23 megs of my current connection. What would having a gig do for me? And I said, that's true. However, what about Google's applications with their Google Docs? If they move into more of a thin client mentality, then they can utilize, you know, their servers can utilize a gig per second, you know, backhaul to all these applications. If you run remote desktop over wireless, it's pretty laggy. You know it's remote desktop. But if you plug into 100 meg or even a gigabit switch and you run remote desktop, it's pretty darn good. It's pretty responsive, especially if you have a machine that is, you know, if you're using Microsoft Remote Terminal Services or, you know, Apple's remote desktop, the ones that are optimized specifically for its own OS, where they can control their own UI elements versus just a basic VNC that just does screen scrapes all the time. It's pretty responsive. So if Google moves into a thin client type architecture with things like their Google Docs and, you know, stuff like that, can you imagine having, you know, you may not need that hard drive, because that was one of the things we had also talked about, was like, oh, thin clients, you know, with our current connections, I've got, you know, 10 gigs of music or whatever, that'd be horrendously slow to back up and take new download off of my internet if I was using a thin client hosted by my ISP. But right. With Google, with this gigabit per second, that would be incredibly fast.
But don't you think that this is also sort of gearing them up for their Chrome OS, almost? Chrome OS?
Well, that's what I'm talking about. Right, I mean, right. They've got... That's when I
where
say
you don't
client.
Where you honestly don't have a hard drive on your, well, you have a hard drive, but you don't use the hard drive on your machine, and all it does is load the operating system. Everything you have for that machine is up in the cloud somewhere, like the way that IBM wants it to be. They're in the cloud, things like that. Which, I mean, all your music would be on Lala or Pandora or whatever. Your documents are on Google Docs and things like that. Your games are just Flash apps. But the thing that gets me here, though, is that is Google... Why does Google want to become their own... sort of want to become their own ISP with giving you really, really fast fiber? I mean, obviously, Google makes money by selling advertisements on the things you see. So if they have... if you're using a Chrome OS where they have access to all of the music that you listen to, all of your documents, all of the games that you play, they give you your internet, they know exactly where you are because of your Android cell phone, and things like that, then they're targeting advertisements to you. They'll make the most amount of money because they have the most amount of information targeting to you. But the gigabit per second thing, it doesn't sort of ride. Like, why would they really want to take that risk and be an ISP? I think that they're sort of trying to be the R&D for the ISPs, and then they'll just hand it off so that they can be the innovators and then not have to worry about the risks of being their own ISP and still being able to reap all the rewards of the uber fast connection.
That is a really good point, and you're going to hate what I'm going to say next, but it's almost like Apple's iPhone. Before iPhone, all the smartphones were crap. The interface was crap. I mean, the closest thing to good interface you had was BlackBerry, which was still crap. After iPhone, everybody wanted to be like iPhone, and it was the interface that revolutionized it. So I think it's that same type of turnkey, well, I don't want to say turnkey, but influential build that, oh hey, look at what we did, look what it can be, now the rest of you go out and try to do this.
I respect Apple for changing the smartphone market. Although I'll disagree with you a little bit, I think Symbian did more than iPhone could have done originally, long before iPhone. And I think that Apple kind of pulled it off of Symbian. But we're not going to get into phone religious wars or here anything. But the thing that Apple did well with the iPhone was say, here's this market that's kind of lagging. It's called the smartphone market. Let's make something that looks and works well, and then we'll get everyone to bump innovation on this market.
Well, and the other thing they did well with it, too, don't kid yourself, it wasn't just that they innovated it and made this wonderful interface. It was also the fact that they did marketing really, really, really well. I mean, if it hadn't, you know, it would have, it had a good chance of failing had they not marketed the iPhone as being such an illustrious, wonderful, oh, you have to have this product. So be under no delusion, you know, that it still would have worked without that. But, you know, same type of mentality. I completely agree with you, man. I don't think Google wants to be the ISP. I think they want to have everybody's data, whether they're on their network or your local cable companies. But I don't think they want to actually own all the tubes and the fiber, you know, lines to everything.
Right. I think they want to reap the benefits and not have to worry about any responsibility.
Right.
Because people already hate AT&T, Verizon, and Comcast and all these other people anyway. So it's like, well, people generally like us, so let's kind of help these guys who they hate along and then dump what could go wrong on the people that they hate anyway. All right, moving on. You want to take this one too?
I can. AT&T, I actually read about this before the article that you mentioned here, but this is as good as any. AT&T is rolling out their new quote-unquote 4G or LTE equipment, planning for 2011. So apparently they're also getting new 3G equipment in as well that they'll upgrade supposedly easily when it comes to that. Which we won't speculate, but you know that's what they say. So I think this is a good thing because everywhere you go, you see Verizon and Verizon's commercials. Oh yeah, look at our 5 times more 3G than AT&T. And everywhere you go, you see a Sprint commercial for the first 4G network. And so you know AT&T has gotten a lot of crap for having a bad network, but no one really heard about their bad network before the iPhone came out. I think it's mostly just because, oh my god, now we have all these smartphones that are requesting all this data, and you know, I'm sure their network was fine before that, but they just couldn't handle the increased load after that. Right. So I think this is a good move for AT&T. I think it'll help tremendously with their network.
And taking this story and adding on something else that you may or may not have heard, that AT&T retains the iPhone exclusivity agreement for another couple of years. I think till 20. I actually think through 2011, that we'll probably see an iPhone 4G, not fourth generation, but 4G, fourth generation cellular technology, sometime 2011, 2012, that will be able to share between Verizon's LTE and AT&T's LTE, because LTE is LTE, whether it's on a GSM carrier or a CDMA carrier.
Yeah, it definitely won't be this year. And that was some of the rumor sites that I was reading for Apple's new iPhone that they're supposedly going to announce in June. It's like, all say, oh, it's largely unchanged, there's not a whole lot, and everybody was complaining about it. It's like, oh, well, there's probably a reason, and this is it.
Right.
I would speculate this is probably it.
Apple wants to hedge their bets and say, we have the AT&T that you've grown to love and hate at the same time, and they can get your new 4G iPhone, or you can switch to Verizon, which you've all been griping about, and you can also get your 4G iPhone.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right, there's no good segue into the next story, so dropkick it in. Russian botnets try to kill each other. Now, mind you, that the botnets are not trying to kill you or your family members or governments or anything like that. It's the botnets that are trying to kill each other. One small startup, the David to the Goliath, is called SpyEye, and this is trying to kill Zeus. Zeus is the Goliath Russian botnet. And what SpyEye will actually do is infect your computer, get rid of Zeus's infection, and implant its own. So it's not like SpyEye is coming in to save you from the evil botnet called Zeus. It's SpyEye is coming to take over London from Zeus, if you understand. If you understand the war analogy, where your computer is London, and yeah.
I honestly laughed out loud when I read this article because it was just so entertaining to... Well, first, because everything evil comes from Russia anyway, according to one of my UT professors. But secondly, because it's, you know, usually you don't get a whole lot of viruses that attack each other. I mean, that's just, it's funny.
Right. This begs some in Soviet Russia joke, but I can't think of one off the top of my head.
We can edit it in later.
We can. Yes, we'll edit it in later.
There's not a whole lot more to say about that story. It is funny. You kind of have to award the programmer's cleverness for killing the other one. In a way, it's a good thing. Oh, hey, I'll just install this other spyware to get rid of this other spyware, and then I'll remove that spyware. But it's, you know, I mean, it's entertaining.
Yeah.
And it's news. So, anyway.
All right. Botnets may be obscene, but new court rules on internet obscenity standards.
Ah, good.
Yay. So this is the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals in Florida, which was talking about sort of what is pornography on the internet. And the thing with obscenity laws is it's really a subjective thing. It's a I know it when I see it, but I can't define it kind of thing.
The internet is such a gray area for law. It's, you know, and that was my one friend is going to OSU for law, business, computer, all mixed in together, and it's such a unique, because there is no precedent for any internet case. There is no, you know, because usually you go into courtroom and you're like, oh, I cite, you know, this person v. this person as the precedent, and this is why my case is the one that you should rule in favor for, or whatever. But the thing with the internet is there really isn't
any precedent.
Any precedents. And there's no real easy way to say this is black, this is white, and this is the answer, because everything is so subjective.
Right. And the article talks about how if you put in a specific definition of obscene, then it would have to be you would have to judge material according to the standards of the strictest communities. But the way that the world works, the strictest communities are the ones with the least amount of population. So you're curtailing what people can see and understand, whether it be obscene or whatever. You're setting that precedent by the minority, by a very small minority, and that's absolutely against the democracy of the United States. That the minority controls what the majority sees, that's silly. We have majority rule, minority rights. So the majority is what should set what is obscene and what is not obscene, and the minority should still have the right to block, firewall, whatever the sites that they deem obscene.
If you don't want to look at it, don't look at it.
Exactly.
I mean, I always get upset with people that say, oh my god, I don't want to go, I can't believe this is here, or whatever, and you know, it's like, so don't go there.
Exactly.
just don't do it. You know, don't go view pages or whatever.
It's like, it's the bad joke of like the blonde walks into the doctor's office and like, doctor, doctor, it hurts when I yank my thumb. It's like, well then don't yank your thumb. Like, it won't hurt. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Anyway. Last story. I was thinking of a really clever introduction to this, so I'm just going to rattle it off. Considering as both of your hosts are not of legal drinking age, this next story is sort of a touchy issue. The study says that beer is good for your health, because it's good for your bones. And there just went my clever introduction, but I'll come up with it and edit it in later.
I guess I'll read it for you.
Hey, you're closer to the age.
That is true. That is true. Basically, it said the study published by the Journal of Science and Food and Agriculture found that beer contains silicon, which ranged anywhere from 6.4 milligrams to 56 milligrams per liter. And the average person's intake for silicon is in between 20 and 50 milligrams per day. And this is good for your bones. So I don't want to say, drink some beer so that you have healthier bones, but that's kind of what the story implies.
Yeah. Drink responsibly. Don't go get absolutely wasted, because that's... Well, that may be good for your bones, not good for the rest of you.
Do you know why I pulled you over tonight, sir? No, I was just taking my vitamins, sir. Oh,
man. my vitamins in liquid form.
Hey, they make gummies for kids.
Do they really?
Well, yeah, they
make
gummy vitamins.
I thought you were saying, like, gummy beer, and I was like, whoa, gummy beer, okay. If it's silicon that's good for you, why aren't we all, like, told to eat motherboards? Like, doctor's orders, go eat some motherboards.
Hey, you know that old Penny Ford that just blew out? Go eat that.
actually, funny story. A friend of mine who goes to high school with me, he was just telling us either today or yesterday, it had been yesterday, that he went to the doctor and, like, he's the quarterback for our high school football team, and the doctor's saying, like, you need to put on some weight, like, little Joey. And Joey was like, okay, whatever, what do you recommend? He's like, you know, maybe you should just go drink some beer. That'll put on some weight. I was just like, that's okay, doctor's orders, ? Like, what?
Can I get that on a prescription pad, please?
Yes, can I get that on a prescription pad?
So anyway, yeah, as you said, drink responsibly.
Drink responsibly, don't party too hard. That about wraps up our episode. You can find me, comment on the, impropriety of our last, story, because internet obscenity laws, standards, and things like that, you can be the strictest community. Like, you're not even allowed to talk about alcohol if you're underage. You can post on the blog, digitalhazardpodcast.blogspot.com. You can send me a nasty email. I may or may not read it, and it may or may not go straight to my trash, at mbaron50@gmail.com. Do you want to tell them how to get in contact with you?
Oh, no, they can just... Any questions for you, you can send Matt's way. He'll let me know.
Oh, okay. I'll have to forward things that I get.
Yeah, you know, you might actually have to read email them, Matt.
Darn it!
God.
I get so much every day. So difficult. Alright, that's it for this week. Hope you enjoy Valentine's Day over the weekend and get some extra needed Z's on Monday with President's Day. So enjoy your weekend, and I'll see you again next week.